Next item on the agenda would normally, well, I'll tell you what, it's number 19, public hearing, adding efficiency to the requirements for coal rings and crab pots, regulation 4 BAC 2710. Mr. O'Reilly, done this one?
Did we do 17?
Oh, I'm sorry. 17's first.
17.
Okay. We've been all over the board today, so
that's
kind of
fine.
It looks like that, so it's kind of hard to keep up with.
Right, I understand.
Thank you, Carl. 17, establishment of 2009 recreational summer flounder management measures.
Okay.
Thanks, Carl.
Good afternoon to everyone. On a personal note, I'm happy that my oldest son, Captain Egan O'Reilly, is here to come watch the proceedings today. He's in the audience with his wife, Erin. They're here from Germany for a week. I can't believe that they're going to spend time with me here, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, I would like you to, Rob, give us a little bit of introduction to Egan, because I think him just standing up, he's not just somebody here from Germany. I've had a chance to know the young man. Just a little bit of an introduction, if you would,
well,
please.
Well, Lyle started this. He said, are you going to introduce him?
Yes, he is.
So Egan is a honors graduate from West Point, class of 2004, graduated 19th in class of 938, I believe, and moved on where he's been posted in Germany for 3 years, and will wind up that tour very soon, and then he and Erin are going to do a whirlwind tour to a number of exotic places, and then finally they just bought a home, so Erin will be here while Egan is posted to different training courses through different forts, a couple of different forts, and then scheduled for deployment to Afghanistan in October.
And his current specialties are?
His current specialties are he is the attached to a brigade, and he is the assistant to the brigade officer overseeing how many different troops?
600.
So he's, I'm very proud of him, to say the least.
He is certainly, I've had a chance to know the young man as he's come up through the ranks and talked to his dad as he's made his way through West Point. He really is a true professional American soldier, and we owe him a debt of gratitude. Good to have you again. Thank you, Mr. O'Reilly.
I have some handouts, which you have. I have a few more up here if anyone would like these. These are additional public comments. And this is the, I guess, 10th year that the commission has had to decide what management measures were best for the annual recreational summer flounder fishery. And 10 years ago, Jack Travelstead came back from Mid-Atlantic Council meeting and said to me, you're not going to believe this. They're talking about raising size limits by a half an inch to overcome some of the shortages that are going on with the flounder fishery.
We'd believe most anything.
And that has occurred. And today, really, that is our decision that we're bringing to you from different committees on what they saw as management measures. But it does come down to a half inch in terms of the options, whether it's 19 inches you see up here, five fish and no closed season, or there are two 18-and-a-half options, both with five fish. One has a summer closed season, July 21st through August 3rd, or 2 weeks during May 1 through June 30th. I'd like to clarify on the second part of that. Going into the management board meeting, the ASMSC Technical Committee had indicated that they were going to recommend that states take their reductions, if it's a seasonal closure, in the two-month period, the wave with the highest landings. For Virginia, that's wave three. We have never had a wave three closure. It's always been a wave four or summertime closure. And there really hasn't been a lot of support for the idea of doing something during May and June. If the commission should adopt option B, the preference that we seem to have found is still the summer closure. Matter of fact, in the ad hoc committee, one of the members said that it's not a problem to have that summer closure. People have gotten used to it. It also is surrounding the time of the pony penning. And so really the preference from what we can find is for the summer closure still. The third option, C, has an 18-and-a-half-inch size limit fly fish and no close season. This is just to get out another item about the board meeting that took place subsequent to your meeting last month. The ASMC Management Board met. We went in as we were instructed, as all the states were instructed, with extra conservation, risk-averse approaches, buffers, whatever you wish to call them, because overall the performance of the states in managing this fishery has resulted in some large overages over time. So one thing that we did, which we've done before and the states did last year, was to include a performance factor, which is just the average of all the overages and underages through time, 2001 to 2008. And what that does, the target going in to 2009 for us is 345,000 flounder. Had the management board said you do need a performance factor, our target would have been reduced to just under 324,000 flounder. The second thing that we did is we tried to account for stock growth in some fashion, figuring that the amount, the number of larger fish is increasing because smaller fish aren't being taken, and all the states along the coast are generally fishing at high size limits, that we could figure a stock enhancement factor or stock growth. And so that would have been here, 330,000. All told, that didn't happen at the ASMFC Management Board. They weren't interested in the performance factor. They weren't really interested in having states do anything in terms of extra risk-averse management, which is really a surprise, as you'll see in some slides later on, that that stance was taken. I don't know all the ins and outs of that, but I do know that Jack indicated, and of course Mr. Bowden was there as well, that there wasn't a lot of other states who were really interested in trying to keep the landings down on a coastwide basis. What you're seeing here is also a disadvantage that we face, and I hope you'll consider this throughout the slides that I show you, that we weren't really on an equal footing with the other states. Delaware and Virginia and North Carolina all had to do something different in terms of the states that went over their 2008 target or recreational quota. They had a chance to simply, and it's not simple because we've had to do it and it's painful, they had a chance to use reduction tables which are pre-made essentially. The dilemma we had was that other than the 19-inch size limit, option A, for option B and C, we had to use older data, 2007 data. And instead of doing a savings type of analysis, we had to do a landings increase analysis, which turns out to just be the ratios of the two savings you might expect if you had 19 and 5 at 2008, which we did, and if you went to 18 and a half and 5 inches, 5 fish, pardon me, in this example with the summertime closure. So the technical committee's advice to the management board was that the three states who chose these types of measures, no one could really say exactly how they would be in terms of precision compared to the other measures, but they were different. And in fact, this is something that Virginia did alone back in 2005 when we faced a similar situation. So I just want you to be aware that we're using 2007 data, not 2008 data. The only option we use 2008 data for, based on the fishery, is for the 19-inch option, option A. To offset this, staff did something that was also done in 2005. We looked at other sets of data, specifically the Maryland Volunteer Angler Survey, the Virginia Volunteer Angler Survey, which is a small sample right now because it just started up. Lewis Gillingham, who's director of the Saltwater Fishing Tournament, for the last couple of years, taggers in that tournament have been tagging summer flounder and recording sizes. The benefit of that volunteer data is you get discards. You get fish that are under the legal minimum size, whereas with the typical National Marine Fishery Service data, it's only the legal size up. So you have to have some way of predicting how much change would happen if you drop from a 19-inch limit, which we had in 2008, to an 18.5. So we brought in that auxiliary data and found that overall there was pretty good coherence among the data sets. It could have been the other way. There couldn't have been coherence, but there was some coherence. It gave enough support that our options passed the technical muster, but at the same time, please don't forget that the underpinning of this is the 2007 data for the 18.5-inch options. Another thing to bring to your attention to cement the idea that there's not that much conservational benefit in moving from a wave 4 closure to a wave 3 closure. Here's July, August here, wave 4, May, June, wave 3, is when you look back at 2007 and look at the daily percentage for that two-month period, you see that the two are very close, whether you're in the summer period or whether you're in the spring period. And that's another reason that at least staff is not recommending anything about a closure in May, June. These are the type of comments we've received so far, and I'll just give you a chance to look those over. I think for option A, numerous 18-inch fish last year have grown to a bigger size this year. I think that's a significant comment, and in fact, some of the data that came from the saltwater fishing tournament in the past from tagging data shows some maximum growth of over 2 inches in a year. If you look at option B, there are comments certainly about releasing fish, and it is true that the amount of discards on a coastwide basis is about 91%. So for all the summer flounder caught, 91% are going back. The release mortality has been set for about the last 8 or 9 years at 10%. There are those who think 10% might be too low overall, but nonetheless, that's what's established for release mortality. If you look at option C, this is a comment that FMAC dwelled on quite a bit, was the economy. And we had this discussion, I think, back with striped bass as well. It's not fuel so much now, but the state of the economy should have some impact. And I think as we go through this, one thing that you might want to keep in mind is economy and effort might have a link, but availability and effort don't have a clear link. So if in 1 year the abundance of summer flounder changes compared to the year before, it could be less effort and still larger takes of summer flounder. A comment that was repeated several times was that larger fish are breeding females and catching them would decrease population. Well, I understand the comment, but really what has been going on in raising the size limit in a pure stock assessment sense are you're actually building fish that way as you raise the size limit. Summer flounder is a little different than most fish that we have looked at in that the sex ratio after a certain size does fall mainly to female fish. Striped bass, for example, you find the same thing as you go up into the upper sizes. They're predominantly females. Summer flounder, maybe even at a smaller size, the predominance of females starts to show through. Here are the votes, or preferences, as I like to think of them, for the options. So option A, these are just citizens who sent in comments and wanted you to know how they felt about the options. And 21 of them supported option A, 14 option B, which has that closure, and 16 option C. Four just had no comments that were sent in. There were a lot of alternative suggestions, as you can see, about 23, mainly centering on the 18-inch size limit, which was not advertised at the public hearing. And staff was able at least in several cases, to comment directly to those individuals to let them know why the 18-inch size limit was not being considered. When you look at the groups, Virginia Anglers Club supported option A. You have option B, both from the Coastal Conservation Association of Virginia and the Recreational Fishing Alliance. They just held a meeting this past weekend, I believe. The charter boat, Chincoteague Island Charter Boat Association voted for option C, FMAC option C, the town of Wachaprieg, and this was a personal communication yesterday from Susan Parker, who indicated that they did have a meeting and voted for option C, and the Peninsula Saltwater Sport Fishermen's Association were torn between option A and B. And I think it's a good time to let you know, based on conversations with Mrs. Parker and also with Mr. Hanforth of the Chincoteague Island Charter Boat Association, that there's a different perception about those in the fishery. We have one umbrella. It's a recreational fishery. It has charter boat. It has private boats. It has a very reduced amount of shore fishing compared to back when we had 15-inch size limits. But they do see the world differently. And one comment from Mrs. Parker was that she hoped you would realize that there are businesses that depend on summer flounder. And I know that you would hear an alternative view from some anglers who have other concerns about how management should be prosecuted on the resource. This will be the most popular slide of the day because it has everything in terms of a track record since 1998, when landings were about almost 1.2 million fish, and only 2001 outdid that, but it wasn't supposed to, because if you look at what can happen, whether it's effort, availability, you can make a choice, pretty much identical regulations, in fact, a little longer closure in 2001 than 2000. The targets were similar, the landings were not. It was more than a doubling just in 1 year. You can see that repeated down here in 2005. The target actually went down in 2006. The landings would have been better off having occurred in 2005 when you had an 800,000 fish target. Instead, it ended up being 40% over, and over in this last column, it was a 52.9% reduction from the previous year. So the way this is set up is that each year the ASMFC provides what's known as a limit or a quota for all the recreational coastwide fishery. Each state has a certain allocation based on what they did back in 1998. We were third place in 1998. We're third place now. Our allocation is 16.7%. New York's is 17.6%. New Jersey is up in the 23% or so up there. So that has been the same year after year. Once we know the landings, we can tell you on a year-to-year basis, for example, in 1999, that the amount of landings was almost 46% under what the target or quota would have been. And then you can move over here and know what you can do to the next year, because what we're really doing each year is we're comparing the landings, for example, in 2008 to the target in 2009. And if you do that, there's room for a 50% increase. So that's the way this is structured. And we'll come back to this because I think some of the decisions on 18.5-inch options, you may benefit from looking at this table again. This is just something that is an exploration, but we have quite a few comments and a very detailed email from Dr. Bob Allen recently that said, you know, you need to let everyone know that these are just estimates. And I think we've told you that just about every year, that the National Marine Fisheries Service has never designed these estimates of harvest to be under quota management. And I think that that's something we've also said. However, the ASMSC does exactly that. They manage according to a quota or a target based on the previous year's landings. And I don't know when that would change, but it certainly causes a lot of disruption by those who are just thinking that the estimates can't be close. And I wonder if it's the estimates that are that far off, because most of the estimates of our fishery are within 10 to 12% precision level. That precision's repeatability, so that tells you there's a pretty good chance that those estimates could be repeated. Whether they're not accurate, no one can answer on accuracy, but on precision they're very good. But there is a lot of grumbling. I don't know whether it's been more pronounced this year than other years, but a lot of dissatisfaction. The MRIP is going on. That's been delayed. So we'll just have to wait and see. But in the meantime, we still have to have these components for our management. And the reason I showed you this, I contacted National Marine Fisheries Service, and Laura Lee also pulled out some of this information. But when you look at the total number of intercepts in wave 3 and 4, which are the big waves, that four-month period is the biggest part of the summer flounder fishery. Wave 3 is about 50%. When you do that, you find out that for the type of fish that can be measured, it can be very variable. What seems odd to me is that in 2006, you had a very small sample size with a 16.5-inch size limit compared to either 2008 with a 19-inch size limit or 2007 with an 18.5-inch size limit. Is there something there? We definitely need to explore that. We do add on to this survey every year since 1994 to try and increase the amount of intercepts. But there's clearly a big difference in those 3 years, and that's something staff's going to explore. This looks like a mess, I know, but the effect is to show you here what's highlighted, that from 2001 through 2008, Virginia has been 6% over the targets collectively. And if you look at some of the, you know, the times before, the harsh year was 2001 that was pointed out to you, 101% over. But in general, compared to some states, we fare very well. If you look at the three largest states, New Jersey's fared well too, a little less than 5%. New York, on the other hand, you have to go back to 2002 to find a time when they were actually under target. And it's just been a procession of overages year after year after year. And their net effect is almost about a 38% overage. And that's interesting, but it's only part of it when you look at the coast-wide, because all these targets added together are one limit. And over time, there's been a 29% overage by all the states. And in 2008 alone, there was a 28% overage of the limit. These kinds of pieces of information are why it's surprising why the ASMSC Management Board would, at least from what I understand, not have been as vigilant as they probably should have been at this time, because 2013 is right around the corner, and that's the stock rebuilding time. So Jessica Coakley from the Mid-Atlantic Council sent me this information. The commercial fisheries do have a payback. If you have an overage, there's a payback. The recreational fisheries don't have a payback. What they have is the type of situation that I'm doing today and the other states do. You try and figure out the potential savings or potential increases and hope that it comes out the way you intend. But in the meantime, all those overages you saw do go in the stock assessment that's done. And they do have an effect on the total allowable landings that is divided into commercial and recreational fisheries. So it's just another reason to figure out some ways of maybe not so much looking at the MRF estimates, but looking at better ways to keep the fisheries to their targets. I hope that doesn't look too blurry to you, but these are the three options again, and I think we've gone over things. I think one thing to mention, no matter where you look, whether it's projected landings or projected landings with a stock increase, except for here, which is option C, at 18.5 and no closed season, everything else falls close to the target. The item two here, which is just using a different set of data, is slightly over as well. But the management board did not require that stock increase. This is just to show you our fishery and the fact that no matter what the size limit, from 15 to 19 inches, most of the time, May, June is the highest portion of landings. And I think one concern that some ad hoc committee members had that we've met with for about 6 years is that they understand that the ASMFC has indicated and started this year that if you have to reduce, 50% of your reduction will be in a closed season. Whereas before, if we go back, to this slide, most of the times the major part of the reductions are coming from the size limit treatment, changing a size limit, not so much in the closed season. So you can imagine that if the closed season is accounting for 10%, if we go over and it has to account for 50%, then that is a problem. Let me go back a little bit. I was better on going forward. There we go. So wave three essentially is the wave of the fishery. And the reason I bring that up is wave three is the only wave that staff has ever found a direct correlation, a significant regression between landings and effort. And because of that, here's wave three over a four-year period, 2005 to 2008. And what I wanted to show you was about the economy in 2008, perhaps, if you want to look at that. A little bit of an uptick in participation. This is participation both by coastal, within 25 miles, non-coastal, and out of state. But you can see that things did drop after 2006 in terms of participation, but picked up a little bit again in 2008. And again, this is the only wave that has a significant relationship to effort. And here is the effort in the form of trips. Pretty much the same pattern that you see for the participation. The effort number of trips fell off quite a bit from 2006 to 2007, slightly picked up again in 2008. Just some notes about this process. These are liberalization options as opposed to reduction options. And so, as I said earlier, option B and C depend on older data. Option A does not. That used the 2008 data, and all that had to be done for option A was to remove the closed season that was in place last year for 10 days in the summer. So it is still a liberalization. When you look at option B relative to 2007, a longer closed summer season would just get you 16,000 less flounder. And the problem with the 18.5-inch size limits might be here. We had an 18.5-inch size limit, five fish. We had two closures. The spring closure, from the best we can calculate, is worth about 8,000 fish. If this was extended for 2 weeks instead of just 6 days, you're looking at 24,000 fish less than $479,000 of what might have been in 2007. Nonetheless, you're still looking at an overage in 2007 over $407,000, and then you can see that here you are at $345,000. So it's difficult to separate oneself from the idea that there has been an event with essentially the same measures that has produced far more fish in landings than our target for 2009 allows. However, in fairness to how things could work, there are some years that if you look at the times we went from 16 inches to 15 and a half inches, a half an inch, yes, there was an increase. And similarly, 2003 to 2004, we dropped a half an inch. You got 130,000 fish. Right now, we have 116,000 fish as a buffer from 2008. I think a big difference in these years, where you dropped from 17 to 16 and a half, and pretty much the same landings, the commission had a much larger target or quota to work with, and that is significant when you're trying to make reductions. And I'm going to attempt to get back to where I was, if I'm lucky. Okay, so even a longer closed season doesn't seem to get you close to that target. So how much risk should be taken? And, you know, that's really, there are a few instances where it worked out that there wasn't a big overage of landings. FMAC was strong on talking about the economy, somewhat on fuel prices, although if you talk to others, they don't see the fuel prices as the problem. It's, you know, just in general, the money involved. The availability of the stock is unknown. This has been a chronic complaint every year that you can't predict availability of the stock. But there are more larger flounder projected. And I think some of the public comments picked up on that. The landings in 2007 with the same size limit, we just went over that. And in addition, the two-week closure still should give fairly high landings compared to the 345,000 target, and option C should be a no-starter for that reason. If you look at what is coming in 2009, a higher average weight, Delaware, Virginia, and North Carolina didn't have to make changes, reductions. The other states do. This size limit is going to be even higher. Whether there's 21 in some states or 20 and a half, 19 and a half, 19s, the size limit's going to be very high. That means higher average weight. And the way the allocations to Virginia and everyone else is done, you take the total weight and divide by an average weight, and that's why we got a very small increase, 2.2%, I put that in your packet, in our quota or our target. However, when you look at the overall increase of the total allowable landings for 2009, 18.45 million compared to 15.77, it's like a 17% increase. The recreational fishery is not going to get much of that. And then 2000, an extra zero there it looks like, but you know, what would happen for 2010 with all of this? And the point I stressed last month was, we are 72% to the rebuilt target. Every management jurisdiction is going to be very concerned about doing the best to make that rebuilt target happen. And so there really shouldn't be expectations that recreational targets are going to increase in 2010, 11, or 12. Here's information. We went round and round about how to look at stock growth. And if you looked at it outside the model framework, you saw a 12.6% increase. If you looked at it within the model, what they projected, you saw about the same decrease. So again, I contacted Jessica Coakley at the Mid-Atlantic Council. She sent this information, and what it tells you is for the four-plus fish, so a lot of the fish that are going to be out there, there's a definite increase at least through 2007. And you can see this trend from 4 to 16 to 23 to 27% in terms of an increase. And you would expect larger fish and more of them to be available, especially since there has been rebuilding. This is the 2007 public hearing information that we presented to you. And at that time, very similar options except for the 18-inch option. And I think what's surprising is that a lot of the fishing industry wanted 19 inches and six fish with no closed season. This is identical to what we have proposed as option A, because truly the number of anglers that get five or even six fish is few and far between. So there was a sort of a struggle with this option with a closed season, 18 and a half, and the 19 and six fish. And that was 2007. So if we can go back to 2007, what you see there is the target we were looking at is 62,000 fish higher than what we're looking at presently for 2009. Yet the 19-inch was a very solid option. And I think that's probably most of it. One thing we have done, and I don't think this is the most current . You have all that. There it is. Staff recommends adoption of the amendments to Regulation 4VAC 26-2010 that would establish a 19-inch minimum size limit, 5-flounder possession limit, and a year-round season open for the 2009 recreational summer flounder fishery. And I think in your packet, page 2 of the regulation contains the substantive changes. And pardon me for saying that, because it's not going to be page 2. Page 2 is the next item that I have. If you look at page 6, at the bottom, section 70, that establishes the year-round season. And if you look back to the next section 50, you'll see that there would be no change in the size limit or in 60 to the possession limit. So it would just be in the season.
Okay.
And that's all I have.
Good enough. Good presentation. Thank you, Rob.
Yes,
questions,
sir,
from members of the commission? All right. Thank you, Rob. This is a public hearing. Are those in the public that wish to be heard on this matter? Are there those in the public that wish to be heard on this matter? Public hearing is now closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can address a little bit of additional background information for the, hopefully for the benefit of the commission. Every year at the council level, we have a debate, and it's a substantive discussion about the merits and disadvantages of conservation equivalency versus coastwide management of summer flounder. And Virginia has been able to be one of the most effective voices in support of conservation equivalency, which allows states to have some flexibility in the management of this fishery. And the reason we're an effective voice is that we come to the table from a position of strength, and that is that we have a record of generally having pretty good performance of hitting our targets. And we may or may not have noticed, but staff has actually done a great job in the past of trying to account for risk and keep us on track with the options that are in front of us. And so our performance record is quite good. And obviously there are some states that have a much different interest than we do. If Virginia were not able, for example, to have conservation equivalency but were required to have coastwide management measures, we'd have, I believe this year, three fish at 20 inches. And that would result in about a 40% cut in our landings. So it would have a really disastrous consequence for Virginia. And there are other states in that same boat. North Carolina is a good example. But our availability of fish is significantly different than it is in the Northeast. But the bottom line is if we hit our targets, then we have a much stronger hand at the federal level when we put these plans together. And so consequently, I think, you know, it would be prudent to follow staff's advice and at least have an option that comes in below the performance target. And I noticed that there are three options that do that, option A and both of the B options. Option C does not come in below the performance target. And so I think as we consider this, and, you know, we have to make some expression for preference of risk. I mean, we have essentially three options that are spread out that each has a different level of risk. And I think it'd be prudent to pick one of those options that's at least under the performance target. And, I know the FMAT recommended option C. Both of those are slightly above the target. I think it'd be more prudent to be below it. I agree that the economy is going to have some bearing on effort. Last year, license sales were down considerably. We're in a very difficult recession right now, and I would expect angling effort to be down again this year. Offsetting that, though, is the fact that we're seeing a significant expansion in the adult year classes in the stock, and so the availability of fish is going up, and that's really the primary risk to us, is that encounters will actually increase, angling success will increase, and landings would go up accordingly. So I would encourage the commission to consider one of those options below the performance target. I think while staff's made a recommendation for 19 inches, I think if you do go with an 18.5-inch fish, you need to incorporate the closed season that they recommend we consider.
Further comment? I'm mighty quiet today.
Yeah. A big lunch, I suppose.
Mr. Taggart?
Yeah, I certainly understand. I'd rather be in a long-term position of strength to help our fisheries out. So I'd have to, all the Watch Creek folks who I fish with and enjoy their company, I'd have to agree with Mr. Robbins that A or B is a better option for us. And quite frankly, I'd like to hear some other opinion on whether A or B is the better decision. But I know for me, C is really not the best option, I think, for a long-term management of this fishery.
Further comment? Mr. Bowden?
As you know, I chaired a Fin Fish Committee, and there was overwhelming support for C, but it's not risk-averse. It's really too close to it. So that kind of more or less led me to option B. But now knowing that the Charter Boat Association is against that and doesn't want a closed season, I'm kind of in limbo land here on that, because we never had anybody from the Charter Boat Association come to the meetings from either Charter Boat Association that I'm aware of. We had CCA members and other fishing group members. So C is not, it's just not risk averse. So I agree with Mr. Robbins that we can't support C, but A or B, and the main difference is going to be the closed season, what effect it's going to have on the Charter Boat Association. I really wish in the future that we could manage fisheries differently, but it's just not happening anytime soon that we could actually have a charter boat fishery as a segment. And that needs to be recognized in the future sometime, but today's not the day.
Well, it appears to me that if you want to achieve two things that we want to do, number one is risk aversion. It's definitely option A. If you want to avoid the closed season that Charter Boat Association does not want, that's also option A. So that's Mr. Tankard.
I would have it. I don't know if they can help me or not. Law enforcement, whether the 18.5, that half inch is something that is really workable, or how that plays out on board.
I'll speak for them because we've dealt with it for so long. We deal with whether it's flounder, whether it's crabs, whether it's oysters. We deal at times in minutial amounts of tolerance levels. And the officers or given wide discretion as far as the 8.5 inches and things like that. So, you know, both of them are a finite number. So regardless, it's not really an issue.
Okay.
Further comments or questions? Dr. McConaughey?
Well, given the facts and that some of the industry doesn't want a closure, I would support option A, the 19-inch with no closed period.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Is there a second to the motion? Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion on the motion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mr. O'Reilly. We're going to take that question Mr. McDonald had because I see Noah is represented. Can you come up, Mr. McDonald, and posit your question again, if you would, please?
Then I'd like to call Mr. I want to know if National Marine Fisheries can clarify the rules that the officers are enforcing. You know, we've got...
In reference, Mr. Gregory wasn't here when you first asked the question, so if you would ask the...
We've got watermen that are getting tickets that don't understand federal regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a way to better educate them, to work with...
Did you want to answer that, Mr. Gregory, or did you want your colleague to...
I
would, yes, sir, please. Did you identify yourself for the record, if you would, please?
My name is Logan Gregory. I'm a special agent with NOAA Fisheries Enforcement in Newport News.
Good to have you here. Can you respond to the gentleman's question, please?
Yeah, I believe the agency, not law enforcement, but National Marine Fisheries Service, sends out letters to permit holders on a regular basis telling them what the regulations are. Now, whether or not everyone has gotten them, I have no way of knowing that. But if they have questions about the regulations, they're always more than happy to call my office, and I have actually brought a copy with me, and the Harbor Porpoise Take Reduction Plan information that anybody here is welcome to have. I only have 5 copies, but you know I have.
Give one to him.
Have that
sure.
Here.
This is what's issued by the VMRC to the waterman, and a state waterman who fishes for striped bass doesn't get this information if they don't have federal permits. How are they supposed to know? How
Mr. Travelspeed, you want to respond?
We have in the past, in addition to providing every waterman in the striped bass fishery, providing them with a copy of the striped bass regulation, we have provided summaries of all of the gillnet regulations, both federal and state, and so it has contained information that you'll find in this federal document. We did not do that this year. It was simply a cost savings measure to make fewer copies of those documents.
But those that don't know, we are under a mandate, basically, to reduce the consumption and use of paper to whatever extent possible and make whatever that's normally available on paper available by website. Now, there are those, of course, that are not in a position to have accessibility to a computer, but most are. But that's one of the reasons. It's not that we just decided not to do it. It's because we can't print anything, or it's just a significant constraint. So
we do have a nice handout that's available that describes all of the gillnet rules, both federal and state, harbor, porpoise, bottlenose, dolphin, and that which we can make available.
But we've got to get that out to the water, and we've also got to educate the officers, because I've got a gillnet boat that's got, tied up in rudy, he has 8-inch nets on the bottom of the spool. He has got his bay tags, but he's going to try down there for croakers. He has 3.25, 3.5-inch nets on top of the spool, which he was going to go out and set, but the officers told him that he could not possess 8-inch nets on his spool. Is that true or is that not true?
That is true.
Okay, so then that means any waterman tied up in Lynn Haven at my dock who wants to fish in the bay, who has 8-inch nets, cannot legally leave Lynn Haven, go above the bridge and fish, because he has to go through, he'll be east of the bridge dock.
That you can't possess them in the closed area.
So then we've got
to second.
Boats to...
He's debating you now.
Somewhere else?
Will you yield for the commission member?
Yes.
Mr. Bowden?
We've had this discussion before in the context of monkfish. When they closed the area off of Chincoteague to monkfish in, but the area adjacent to it further north was open. And we had law enforcement feel the same way, that you couldn't, the Coast Guard was going to enforce it. and it was in direct conflict with the U.S. Constitution, and it could not be enforced because the gear was legal at the dock, the gear was legal when it was deployed, and transit is interstate commerce clause of the Constitution and could not be enforced. Now, that come from NOAA. So maybe that's something, you know, you're only in violation of the law if you deploy the gear. The gear is not deployed. You're not in violation of the law.
I don't know.
So you can leave one area and go to another area as long as it's legal in that second area. You can have it aboard. I think that's something really needs to be looked into because we've had that same problem, Chincoteague, with monkfish nets.
Well, that may be a good thing to bring up the next time they, you know, when they ask for public comment on these regulations, that would be a good time to bring that type of thing up.
It has been changed subsequent to that. Now it says you cannot have them. Would you read that directly?
I can read it, actually. I've got it right here. It's 50 CFR 229.34B, and it addresses closures in three different areas. And what we're talking about is the southern mid-Atlantic waters. And it says from February 15th through March 15th, it is prohibited to fish with, set, haul back, possess on board a vessel unless stowed or fail to remove any large mesh gill net gear from the southern mid-Atlantic waters.
Well, what do you consider stowed? Does it give you a
definition? There is a definition for stowed. Let me see if I have it here.
I guarantee you caught the spool.
Yeah. It should be covered on the spool.
Okay. Can't be stowed. All nets are covered with canvas or other similar material and lashed or otherwise securely fastened to the deck, rail, or drum, and all buoys larger than 6 inches in diameter, high flyers, and anchors are disconnected, and any other method of stowage authorized in writing by the regional administrator and published in the Federal Register.
So if it's on the net, it is stowed if they cover it with canvas, because you said on the
net. Yes.
So you can have
on the spool, covered with canvas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It just cannot be easily deployed. It was the intent.
Right.
Okay, that's the intent.
Okay.
Do you have something
there? Also, yeah. We had a waterman who was fishing 6.5-inch net east of the bridge tunnel, and it was he pulled his gear back, and the marine officer asked him how long it was. He told him 1,200 feet. He told him he was illegal. He was only allowed to have 300 feet, which is that true?
Okay.
After he did some research on it, he found it was 300-foot panels.
Okay.
But the officer who told him that, if this is true, didn't know the regulations, so we need to make sure our MPOs are aware of.
Well, I'll look it up.
In the meantime, I can tell you what it says while he's finding it. What they're talking about is an individual panel 300 foot long. State of Virginia only allows 1,200 foot. Under the federal plan, it's 2,100 foot in the southern portion and 3,900 foot from New Jersey up can be deployed in a single one. And I think the officer mistook the 300 foot net to mean the total length. And what really it meant was each panel would be no longer than 300 feet.
No longer than 3,900 feet.
Well, we're 2,100 down here. Right. 3,900 above us. Virginia, Maryland line. It changes.
Okay. Is there any other question that we need to pose to Mr. Gregg or anybody from NOAA? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what this event highlights is really the opportunity and need for more education and perhaps an outreach initiative on these specific federal plans, because we've got the difficulty is there are a large number of them now. I mean, we've got bottlenose dolphin take reduction plan. We've got harbor porpoise. We've got large whale. We've got the large cetaceans involved. And there's a whole myriad of regulations and different plans with different boundaries that come into play. And, I mean, frankly, I think it does highlight the opportunity, really, that we have to perhaps reach out to the Office of Protected Resources at NOAA and ask if we could have some sort of educational initiative from their office, because if we could somehow collaborate and get that information to all of our state-level permit holders that may fall through the cracks if they don't have federal permits,
well,
I think that'd be helpful.
I think that, along with the same lines, if you can have the same discussion with NOAA mediating it, with the law enforcement officers, regardless of whether it's going to be NOAA or whether it's going to be our officers under the joint enforcement agreement, and the watermen to be impacted, so when they leave, there's no misunderstanding. Something like a mini seminar to get together on these specific, because as Mr. Bowden and I discussed it, I mean, there are so many different plans with so many different intricacies or whatever, and, you know, doing the best we can to enforce them. So I think that would be a good idea, Mr. Gregory, if we can, Mr. McDonald, if we go from there.
Our watermen just want to know. They don't want to break the laws. They just want to know who they are.
And we don't want to write tickets, believe me.
No, absolutely. And I'll say this, you know, any of the tickets that were written, they still have to go through a review process. Just because they were issued an enforcement action report doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get a violation, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get a fine. What it means is, at that point, at that time, and that day, this is what the officer saw and found and thought it was a violation or didn't think it was a violation, depending on the circumstances.
I'm glad you brought that up because a lot of folks are under the impression, not those that deal with federal fisheries all the time, but, you know, when we issue a summons, a state violation, it's a summons, you're going to court. Your system's a little bit different. You receive the EAR, you evaluate it, or I presume you or your supervisor, whoever evaluates it, then a decision is made as to what the final decision is, and it's out of the hands of the officer per se. So, but anyway, your point's well made. Let's work on something, Colonel Rhodes, that we can all get together, make sure that we understand these, so that when this type of season comes open again or whatever, we're good to go. Thank y'all very much.
Along those lines.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lee.
Along those lines, I think we really need to send a letter from this commission to the National Marine Fisheries Service, saying that this year, due to the economic concerns, we did not include the Marine Mammal Protection Act stuff.
Mr. Greg Logan, if I can, did you hear what Mr. Bowden just said? Because he's the one, you can write the letter all you want to, he's the one that every piece of paper is going to.
I suggest from the commission that we would send a letter to the National Marine Fisheries Service stating that this year we did not include any Marine Mammal Protection Act information whatsoever with our hand act, due to economic concerns, and the fishermen were really operating under good faith, and there's been a lot of confusion with the regulations, and we're going to try to work through it with law enforcement, National Marine Fisheries Service, and fishermen concerned to come up with an understanding of the current regulations.
I think that's an excellent idea, and had I known that previous to this occurring, this would have been handled a lot differently. Had I known that these individuals had absolutely no reference material provided to them, which normally is, this probably wouldn't have been a little bit different.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Mr. Bowman, can I request that Mr. Salvatore come up here?
Sure.
From National Marine Fisheries Service Protected Resources. Would you please introduce yourself, tell me what your job title is and your description.
Good afternoon. My name is Glenn Salvador. I work for Protected Resources for National Marine Fisheries Service out of Gloucester, Massachusetts.
Good question.
I live on the Eastern Shore in Belhaven. My job is to do gear research to do with the different take reduction plans, outreach and education, workshops with Marine Patrol, Office of Law Enforcement, U.S. Coast Guard. My area is from Maine to Florida. We have two guys doing that area, and I recently did a workshop with the Coast Guard over in Cape Charles. I've done workshops Virginia Beach, Chincoteague, Ocean City. A lot of my work is done individually with fishermen, where they might call up and I'll drive to where they are and meet with them, or, you know, try to do workshops where we can get a group of fishermen together. Work out of my home, so I'm available 7 days a week from early in the morning until late at night.
Good deal. Your question, Mr. Adam?
Several. The reason I requested you be here, he said really he doesn't get many invitations. And probably nobody from National Marine Fisheries Service gets a lot of invitations, so really don't feel bad about that.
Oh, I don't.
But I thought it'd be a very good idea to have him here, because he's the one really that does the outreach, that can answer our questions. And I had met him on one prior occasion. I knew he did a grant project with Chris Walker. I had no idea that you were Protective Resources. I thought maybe you were some kind of experimental guild. You know, I knew you worked for National Marine Fisheries Service. I had no idea that was your job description, and even Chris didn't have no idea. because he said he worked with you, he met you in Moorhead City and done this project with you. So the reason I really want you here is these two gentlemen in front, will they please stand, Mr. Travelstead and Mr. O'Reilly? Will you stand up just a second? These two people are in charge of fisheries for the state of Virginia.
Well,
if you get the information to them concerning anything, they can see to it that it gets to the fishermen. So we really want to just do away with confusion, because a lot of this is just plain confusion. Yeah, I knew, and I'm 100% compliant. And after years of no one being interested, and then all of a sudden there's interest taken in this with no take, and we've been trying to get an exemption since long before Mr. Bowman was on the commission for the striped bass fishery. I think it's just, you know, we don't want this confusion in the future. We want to make our staff available, and hopefully you available to our staff to answer any questions, because really I have no real contact. You can do it in a very time-friendly way. Most of the time when you send stuff to the National Marine Fisheries Service, it's a long time getting an answer, and sometimes the answers don't come. So that's the main reason I want you here. So all the fishermen, the gentleman that asked the question at first, Mr. Spot McDonald, operates two docks, one in Virginia Beach, one on the Eastern Shore, which formerly Chesilantic. And he would be more than glad to post anything that you have at both of those locations. And I'm sure all the other docks in Virginia would be more than glad to do it, so we don't have this confusion in the future.
Good enough. Thank you, Mr. Salvatore. Thank you for being here. I think it just illustrates an example of sometimes things can fall through the cracks, and we work. The problem that you run into is if you don't fix them, you're neglectful. If you do fix them, it's one of those things that happens. We work together to come to common cause of ensuring that the enforceability is there. So, thanks a lot.